talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. Political commentator and investigative journalist. You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I mean, it just, if that was bad enough, I mean, what a train wreck in Westminster with the new prime minister, Sunak. And, you know, Rishi is Goldman Sachs. His job is central bank, digital currency rollout, social credit, all of that stuff, cutting the economy down to size so that it fits the cookie cutter shape that Klaus Schwab and BlackRock have in mind for the country, for Europe, for the world. And it's called the Great Reset. And it's real. And it's married with geopolitics. So we got to look at both of those things to find out what's coming down the pipeline. Of course, we'll try to unpack that in the next hour with best-selling author F. William Engdahl is going to be joining us, hopefully, on the live link. And we're scheduled to connect with Basil Valentine in this hour. And we'll try to get Basil. He's a little bit elusive. He's on the road at the moment. And so we'll be able to catch him. I don't know what exotic location he's in at the moment, but certainly he's going to be wherever he is. It's probably very interesting. But until that time, so look, something interesting developed here, and it just pretty much says everything. The Associated Press, you remember the World War III controversy last week? You remember it was on the edge of their seats because we were told that Russia fired a missile into Poland. You remember that? Russia fired a missile into Poland. Zelensky got up on his Zoom box, his global Zoom box there, and the president of the world, Vladimir Zelensky, addressed the public saying NATO needs to escalate. This outrage cannot stand. Russia has attacked the sovereign territory of NATO and all this sort of stuff. Do you remember all that? Remember the scare and the tabloids? Everyone was pushing it. And where did that fake news story originate? It was a fake news story. So World War III almost triggered by the mainstream media. The mainstream media and the Associated Press. And by the time that got out and got traction and sort of, you know, was replicated, reproduced itself across the global digital media sphere, mainstream media, by the way, you know, this story was as bent as a 9-pound note, okay? And it wasn't the alternative independent media that produced this egregious piece of misinformation. It was the mainstream media. And not only that, it was one of the major news wires, AP, the Associated Press. And they put this story out. It was fake. They cited an anonymous U.S. intelligence source. That happens all the time. This is why whenever I hear someone cite an anonymous U.S. intelligence source, I just basically bank on the fact that if I call it out and ignore it or say that it's bogus or it's basically a PR deflection, I'm right 90% of the time. Got a 90% batting average. I got a 900 batting average by betting against the intelligence community. Okay. Once in a while, when they put this stuff out, it will be correct, but only if there's an intention behind it. Case in point, the Russian invasion into Ukraine last February 2022. They were keep banging on about Russia's going to invade, Russia's going to invade. And most people were like, well, this little boy has cried wolf so many times from weapons of mass destruction, et cetera, going forward. So why would you take any interest or believe anything they're saying, of course. So obviously I bet against them there. And of course I was wrong the one time out of 10. So anyway, 900 batting average. If you go at the mainstream media on every time the intelligence community agrees on whatever, that Hunter Biden's laptop's Russian disinformation, or that the someone unleashed a Novichok chemical weapon on UK soil, or whatever it is. If you bet against the mainstream media, you will bat 900. Okay, if you bat 900, you're in the Hall of Fame. period. So would you rather be in the Hall of Fame? If you go with the mainstream media, you're batting 100. So if you bat 100, you're not on the team. You get cut. So you can't play. So, but if you bat 100, you can get a job at the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, and all of the great mainstream media outlets, NPR, etc. If you bat 100, you can definitely get a job as an analyst. In fact, you could probably get a podcast on NPR, like Michael Morell, former acting CIA director. Amazing. He was acting director for a minute, and he's been rewarded in perpetuity with high-paying jobs in forever, basically. He'll be anyway, he'll be on NPR forever, and nobody listens to it anyway. But so AP, Associated Press, put out this fake story to try to either trigger World War III or create more sort of derision against Russia. So now they've admitted, finally, after a week, they admitted that it was a mistake, and they're sorry, and they're firing the journalist behind the story. So the agency has sacked James LaPorta over the erroneous news alert. And this has been reported. Okay, so he's been fired. But here's the thing. It's not him. It's not him. They have layers of editors and editorial checks, balances, and controls at Reuters, AP, and all the other major agencies. So, you know, whether his sources were bogus or whatever, that's not the point. That they wouldn't have run with this story. They wouldn't have run with this story, period. They wouldn't have run with it if they thought there was anything or needed confirmation, something that important. Russia throwing missiles into a NATO country. You'd think you'd want a little more, you know, you'd want double, triple confirmation. Maybe someone to go on record. How about that? Someone to actually put their name to it for a change instead of an anonymous intelligence source familiar with the matter. So anyway, they fired the journalist. So he's been basically, yeah, they've thrown him under the bus. So he'll probably, he's done this, practically started World War III. It wasn't him, it was his editors. It was the editorial heads at AP. They're the ones who should get fired. And the journalist too, or whatever. But at least, you know, it should go higher up the chain. So they're just throwing him under the bus. He'll get rewarded anyway. He'll probably get a job at MSNBC or something for his good work. But so anyway, this is important because they're the source of dangerous misinformation. This kind of thing actually has consequences. It actually has consequences. And, you know, that's the point. That's the point. You know, they rail about tweets and, oh, this, the fact checkers, this tweet lacks context, or you get hit by this on Facebook or Instagram. Misleading claim. They didn't throw any of that garbage on this story. And this got unlimited traction. And it got people all riled up, and it pushed for a moment, the world was pushed to the precipice of World War III or NATO getting into an Article 5 trigger situation with Russia because of the mainstream media. Not just AP, but everybody who parroted that story without checking it. Of course, we knew it was bogus immediately. Most independent media, especially the ones that we work with, like 21st Century Wire, UK Column, everyone on TNT Radio, pretty much called it out as bogus immediately before there was confirmation or before there was the retraction by AP, because you only had to go on Twitter and look at the actual missile fragments to see it was an S-300 system, you know, ex-Soviet system, and only Ukraine was using that. So it was Ukraine who fired missiles into Poland. I mean, that was easily provable within hours of the event. So the independent media is actually doing journalism, actually checking things before jumping to conclusions that might lead to the Third World War, right? But the mainstream media is not. No, they're actually amping it up. Very irresponsible. But anyway, they've sacked this low-level reporter, and he'll probably get a job at the Brookings Institute or something. He's probably an analyst. Anyway, he'll be rewarded for his good work. He's a 35-year-old investigative reporter, Mr. Laporta. And he's been at AP supposedly since April 2020, covering military affairs and national security issues. And by the way, who's the government stooge that fed him this intel? Because he had to be speaking to somebody. That was a strategic quote leak or statement to a mainstream journalist. You don't just do that willy-nilly. You don't say that. Everybody in the national security complex knows that there's consequences to a statement like that, that's implicating Russia in violation of Article 5. Everybody knows what that means. It's not technically in violation of Article 5. It's that Article 5 means they'll convene and decide what to do. It's not like an automatic reflexive trigger that starts a NATO war, which is what a lot of politicians and mainstream media people say it is. That's not actually what it is. Go read Article 11. No one's read the NATO treaty, by the way. Certainly no politicians I know have ever read it. They claim to have read it. I guess they've seen it on Wikipedia, and they've got a sort of an idea of what it says. But anyway, look, let's take a break here with TNT Today's News Talk, and hopefully we'll try to connect Mr. V on the other side. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. We'll be right back.
TNT Radio's Jesse Zurawell.
G20 Bali Leaders Declaration. It's chock full of declarations about injection passports, central bank digital currencies, sustainable development, all of the globalists' favorite agendas or key agendas.
He was the one who actually, in a public context, said, why aren't we cooperating together to institute a universal passport of some sort in which all of our key data would be on this program that would actually then everyone who would be flying around the world would have to actually have in order to gain access to our various societies. So again, the initiator of what became, I think it was number 23 in this long list of programs that the G20 mm-hmm. countries unleashed, amongst the many other things which are also very suspicious, and they all cooperate and work together in some important ways, from how we're going to manage moving forward our deindustrialization, our use of alternative energy resources, controlling and influencing the supply of food to the world. And then we have these regulations that we have been worried about all this time. And nothing is, I just get the sense that nobody gives a damn.
Jesse Zurawell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and Lies in American Education at SalemNow.com.
Patrick Henningsen talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. I was watching the World Cup last night on the big screen. Team USA was playing Wales, and I was so pleased to see Wales score their first World Cup goal since 1958. And what an incredible moment for this country that loves its sport. It was fantastic. So they drew with America, with the USA, 1-1. In the early group rounds. And someone who's really following this event closely, and not just the sporting side of it, but all the political backdraft from the World Cup in Qatar, Basil Valentine is joining us on the line right now from an exotic location somewhere in the world. Hello, Basil. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Patrick. Good to be with you.
This is this World Cup is just always providing all sorts of interesting things. Not all good, but a little bit controversial. And then there's the sports side of it. What do you make of this so far, this event?
Well, it's nice to see some goals. World Cups are often very cagey affairs with teams setting up very defensive formations and things. And, you know, goals can be very few and far between, but there were 8 in England's opening match, England getting 6 of them. And I was pleasantly surprised. They went out and gave Iran a bit of a spanking. I gather you've heard that the Iranians are blaming protests or some kind of political backdrop for their heavy defeat.
They are. Yeah, they're basically saying they're blaming the media and the sort of the Western NGO complex for drumming up protests, and they're saying that hurt the team's morale, etc. And that's why they didn't play so well.
It's certainly true that the lead BBC football presenter, former England player Gary Lineker, who is developed something of a reputation for his wokeism. He spent the introduction to the match condemning the Iranian regime and the human rights violations and all the rest of it. But I don't know whether the similar sort of opprobrium was delivered with regard to the Saudi Arabian team, who played for the first time today. I mean, very, in many ways, both, you know, similar regimes, both theocratic, both rather medievalist ideas, one Shia, the other Sunni. I think there's a case, obviously, for saying that Iran, formerly Persia, is a more sort of valid, cohesive entity than Saudi Arabia, it being an ancient kingdom that traces its roots back, as far as you go, with a very, very rich culture of history and intellectualism. Saudi Arabia was carved out of the desert by the British only just over 100 or so years ago, unbelievably, and gifted to this Saud family. You know, the whole thing's sort of relatively recently made up.
Well, it's the only country that's named after a family.
That's right.
What kind of country names itself after a family? No. Iran, women can drive in Iran. Women work. Women fill some of the highest positions in government, in business, academia, science. The women run the country in Iran. A lot of people will tell you that. The women run Iran. They make a big deal about the headscarf issue. But in terms of opportunity, Iranian women are high achievers. So very different than the kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Yes. And talking of high achievers, it was actually the Saudis that just a few minutes ago completed an almost miraculous recovery after going 1-0 down against Argentina to a Lionel Messi penalty. After 10 minutes, the Saudis came back and won 2-1, one of the biggest shocks in World Cup history.
Wow, so they beat Argentina.
Saudi Arabia beat Argentina, yes.
Unbelievable.
To make the final.
Unbelievable.
It just goes to show. That's why we like international football, because it can throw up things like this. So in terms of the football, it looks all set for a good tournament. I think the temperatures are tolerable out there in Qatar most of the time this time of year. I think the FIFA, in spite of the FIFA president, Jean Laporte, he was mocked by Lineker again for his comments about, "I feel like a woman and I feel like a construction worker." Did you see all that?
No. Was that wokeism from Lineker or from FIFA?
To deflect criticism of the fact that Qatar was hosting it. And the fact that, you know, the women's rights are restricted in Qatar, and I think it's 1,000 or something construction workers died. So coming, Gianni Infantino, I'm sure that's his name, say, he defended the whole Qatar thing in no uncertain terms in an hour-long monologue, which has been painted as bonkers in some quarters. Decidedly outspoken for, you know, usually the president of FIFA. If you remember Sepp Blatter, we had some fun with him, didn't we, Patrick, back in the day?
Oh, Seb, the guy that collects the envelopes.
That's right. Of course, you know, just in a huge cloud of corruption. And now we've got this book, Infantino, which means child, Italian, of course, you know, childish. So some people are saying that his outburst, talking about his own deprived childhood and therefore how he was qualified to speak on behalf of underprivileged people everywhere. This didn't go down very well.
Yeah, there's just woke. There's a lot of that virtue signaling and kind of grandstanding. All these pundits, by the way, you know, they had like a couple of years to protest this, but they didn't, did they? They kept their mouth shut, and now they wait till they have secured their visas, they've got their contracts, they got their money from the Qataris, and then they go on and spout all the human rights lines and stuff like that. Everyone knew all this stuff years ago, right? And all of a sudden, what do you make of that?
Well, today, amongst the things that Infantino said was, today I feel gay. You see, this was his bid to, he empathized with members of the gay community. That's what he was trying to say there. Today I feel a migrant worker. He claimed that he felt like a migrant worker. And the number of migrants who have died while helping the World Cup in Qatar happen is, you know, the numbers are not exact, of course, because these people are, from Bangladesh and Sri Lanka and other countries where I'm afraid to say they're sort of regarded as somewhat expendable. But have a guess as to how many migrant workers have died in bringing this World Cup to fruition.
I don't know, a couple hundred, you know, maybe 200 or something, maybe. I don't know.
6,000.
What?
I know.
That's a massacre.
And not only that, their families have been denied anything in the way of genuine compensation. Infantino has long had a chance to address this issue by taking on Qatar and making it abundantly clear that this isn't how people should be treated. I mean, you know, there were options for FIFA. If they'd wanted to really press the Qataris, then they could have said, look, unless this all improves, you're not having it. Because you can always stage a tournament in England, in Germany, France, Italy, any of the major European footballing countries who have a plethora of stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Yep.
So they didn't do that.
They didn't do that because they all still want to pocket the cash. And
that's right.
It makes no sense. This World Cup makes no sense.
That's right.
So what else on this sort of controversial front? I'm just looking at how many businesses lost money around Europe and in the UK because they shut all the leagues down. They shut all the domestic leagues down.
That's right. Yeah,
that's huge.
Play the World Cup at this time of year, but it's because it was when Qatar was granted the tournament, people hadn't really cottoned on to the fact that it's simply too hot to play football in Qatar in June and July when it usually takes place. Just so, too hot.
So what's that mean? They had to shut down all of the domestic industry of sport in all of these countries.
It starts again in England after Christmas.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Well, you can't do both at the same time. So this is what's had to happen, the long pause. On all sorts of levels, it's a bit of a fiasco. There's no doubt about it. But hopefully the football will be the saving grace. But that figure of the death of 6,000 migrant workers really is absolutely off the charts, isn't it, Patrick? You know,
I just shut the whole thing down. Now, I mean, it's ridiculous. I would have canceled it. I don't care. That would have been, if you wanted to punish the Qataris for any egregious human rights violations, you just say we're canceling it a month before or 2 months before, right? And then have it in the summer in England,
yeah,
or something. Wow.
Well, we're due one. You know, we haven't had it since 1966. This is actually the country that gave birth to football. We've got fantastic stadiums up and down the country. So people quite understandably feel that it's our turn. But through various machinations, the governing body of football ended up in Switzerland. Now, there are books about how that happened and how football was effectively taken of the governance of football was basically taken away from the British and relocated to Switzerland, and ever since we've been regarded as second-class citizens within people.
Yeah, well, David Beckham's done well out of it, though. Didn't he make a pretty penny off this?
Yeah, $150 million for David's endorsement. yeah. Nice work if you can get it, Patrick.
Yeah. That's a pretty good wedge.
Yeah, not bad.
Right, he's worth every penny, Basil. He's worth
every
penny.
Meanwhile, of course, we've got our...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm losing you, Patrick.
Oh, that's okay. Sorry. I think we're back. Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, meanwhile, we've got problems of our own in this country. And something I've noticed coming out of Ireland at the moment, I don't know if you've heard about the East Wall protest.
No, tell us.
The East Wall is a sort of rather deprived working class community in North Dublin. And they have recently been recipients of thousands of young men, immigrants of one sort or another, economic migrants, asylum seekers, whatever. And this has brought thousands of people out onto the street because they don't feel it's the right place for them. It's already a deprived area. And, of course, they were not consulted at all before these people were moved in. It's prompted a huge controversy with various other sort of Irish celebrities, including a transvestite female impersonator called Dr. Panty Bliss, condemning as racist the fact that the local community are not happy about what's happening. And if I can quote a tweet from another Irish person, say It's the name is written S-A-O-I-R-C-E, I-R-S-E, I think it might be Sasha McHugh, who tweeted, "I hate the idea that people should be consulted if people who aren't white move into an area. Why do you think that you should be consulted before somebody from a different country moves into your area? Do you hear yourself?" Aside from these and a few tabloids, these four protests have, of course, received basically no mainstream media coverage in Ireland. Certainly, they've escaped the attention of the national broadcaster, RTE. Why is that, we have to ask ourselves?
Interesting question. I wonder, maybe it's because they don't want the rest of the country to enter the discussion or the debate on this. They just kind of want to keep it, hidden, mainly from people's view. How long can they, in a country the size of Ireland, Basil, how long can you keep something like that under wraps?
Well, Ireland is apparently very much a target country for Agenda 2030. And between the lines, UN plan is to relocate up to 1 million people from other parts of the world in the Republic of Ireland. Now, that represents a sort of 20% increase in the entire population. And for somewhere that until recently had a stable population with 98% church-going Catholics, this represents a fundamental change in the whole fabric of society. And it isn't the evolution into multiculturalism of people from different parts of the world coming and setting up, exotic foods. And everybody has welcomed that in the British Isles as a whole, of which Ireland is one. This is something altogether different. This is changing the whole demographics and culture of a community. And it's very interesting that it seems that if any group of indigenous European people seek to stand up for themselves effectively and say, thank you very much, we like things as they are here, we have sufficient resources just for ourselves and our community, we have a cohesive social structure and culture, and we don't feel that would be enhanced by millions of thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of people from a completely different culture and from a completely different part of the world turning up. Now, of course, to the neoliberal fascists, any statement like that of cultural identity, of course, is immediately labeled racism. It's just racism. That's all it is. And of course, that is the biggest. Well, you know, that's one of the great sins of modern times. And anybody standing behind what appears an argument that can be labeled as racist has to be simply steamrolled out of the way. But I think, you know, the Agenda 2030, a key part of it is breaking down national borders, which we're seeing increasingly. Sunak has been instructed by the World Economic Forum to get a lot closer to the European Union, if not rejoin. And mass migration is part of it. That's part of the plan for Europe, Patrick, whether we like it or not. And if you don't like it, you're a racist, period.
Well, see, yeah, that would be a good argument for the Irish. If they were a sovereign country, then they could have that discussion, that debate about whether this is good policy or bad policy, whether they can afford it or not. But unfortunately, if you belong to the Brussels, if you belong to the European Soviet, the new Soviet based in Brussels, you don't have that kind of sovereignty. That's the problem with the EU, isn't it?
Absolutely. Interestingly, the left tends to see working class people protesting against immigration and automatically assumes that the protesters have been duped.
Right. Yeah. No, I can see that.
That these poor people have been deceived by the dastardly far right and the like, and that they're not acting on their own initiative at all, but have been tricked into this position.
That's a fantastic bit of gymnastics there. But yet, yeah, I see them constantly trying to pull that move off. Yeah.
See, the left isn't supposed to oppose the working class, not overtly. But what it does do is condescend and infantilize the working class in such a way as to present them as having no views of their own, just really a sort of hopeless, brainless mob herded by far-right groups. And there's a lot of that at the moment.
That's a perfect description of the situation, actually. You've absolutely nailed that. You want to write that one down. We need to emblazon that everywhere. You've just basically described the left-right pseudo-paradigm in absolute perfection. Basil Valentine, we're talking with our roving correspondent here about lots of different things, including now EU affairs and Ireland. Let's take a break quickly with TNT, Today's News Talk, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Say what? Putin fears green energy? Oh no, not true at all.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The Ukrainian delegation hosted its first ever pavilion at the United Nations Climate Summit in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. The Ukrainian spokesman, Yulia Solovey, had this to say about European green energy.
Green energy is something which Putin fears a lot. And by moving to this green future, by uniting people all over the world,
Putin fears green energy? Hell no. Putin laughs his bleep off every time Europe doubles down on their solar and wind energy commitments because he knows it weakens them economically, energy-wise, and national security-wise. The last thing Putin or China fear is green energy commitments by the West. They're laughing, and they know it weakens us. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
I've been driving for most of my life and I've always been a safe driver. But as I've grown older, driving has become more challenging. Intersections feel busier. Driving in peak hour traffic and travelling longer distances is stressful. And driving at night or in bad weather is risky. Even small mistakes can be costly. Look for the signs. If driving is getting harder, there are alternatives. Make a plan to stop driving on your terms. Don't stop driving by accident. Think Road Safety, a message from the Government of South Australia.
In regional and rural areas of our great country, the sun brings a heavy toll. Skin cancer hits us hard. And if you've spent a lot of time out under the sun, your risk is high. Melanoma is the deadliest skin cancer, but it's curable if you get it early. Monthly skin checks are a must. If a spot, mole, or freckle doesn't look or feel right, don't wait. To find out more, visit melanomapatients.org.au.
Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
All right, we're well into the second hour here. We're joined by Basil Valentine on the line. Look, there's a lot of just incredible things going on in Europe. You brought up this story, Basil, about this protest in Ireland, which has been pretty much blackballed in the mainstream media. You can't find anything about it. Clearly, it's an uncomfortable scene for the government in Dublin. And of course, this is playing right into the hands of the European Union. Ireland's just become a kind of backwater, a kind of EU backwater, hasn't it? It's completely been emasculated as a country because of Brussels. And it's sad to see the decline. And during COVID, they absolutely went crazy on all the restrictions. I think they kept their sort of Beijing style regime on pretty much longer than any other European country, and left a lot of people scratching their heads saying, what happened to Ireland? You know, as a sort of, I thought there was a cauldron of rebelliousness and independence. What happened to all that? Right. So we're going to connect. We just lost Basil. We're going to try to bring him back on the line. But it is incredible to see this, the kind of the EU effect, what it does to sort of sovereignty of these various countries. And there's no better example than Ireland. You know, what happened in terms of the common agricultural policy is that Brussels was able to buy off a lot of the country, or the constituencies that are important. They were able to buy them off through things like the common agricultural policy, and really sort of kind of buying compliance loyalty to Brussels. But now all that stuff's kind of fading away. We're now into the Great Reset Zone, where it's about the deindustrialization of these countries, and Ireland suffering as bad as anybody. And I think people have been completely, I think they've been totally duped, Basil, and a lot of Irish are waking up to this, as are the French, as are many other countries. I think Brussels has got a tough road ahead keeping the Soviet Union together. What do you think? Oh, I think we still got Basil on the line. Oh, we might have lost him again. We'll try to get him back. Got some connection issues.
Hello, Patrick.
We got him. How you doing?
Yeah, you've got me for the moment. Yeah, not bad. Yeah.
I was just talking about Brussels.
Yes, I heard you say they've succeeded in bribing the Irish into submission for the time being.
Yeah, not anymore, though. I think those days are over. Because we're in the Great Reset Zone now. So it's about deindustrialization. It's about cutting down economies. So I think the EU's in trouble. I think they're in trouble.
Well, I jolly well hope so. If you have seen the new documentary, which is now up on Rumble, Died Suddenly, it's about depopulation as well.
I saw that. That thing is trending like crazy on Twitter.
Yes, 1.5 million views already. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The tide is turning. There's no doubt about it. Those holding out with the safe and effective mantra are an increasingly dwindling band. 66. Interesting number. 66 senior medical professionals have written to the Department of Health in the UK saying that they have grave concerns about the vaccine being given to pregnant women, and that the rollout should be stopped immediately because, of course, it's associated with miscarriages and stillbirths. A huge spike in miscarriages and stillbirths.
That's tragic. That is just tragic. Nobody wants to hear that. But yet, this is a real thing. This is a real problem. And I hope that documentary is going to raise awareness, at least get people active and pressuring their officials on some of these issues and saying, look, you know, what are you going to do? Carry on with this? Are you going to react to these numbers? Are you going to change the policy? What are you going to do? And I don't see
That's
any.
Right.
I don't see any of the government ministers wanting to do anything.
Well, as we've noted before, it's going to have to be one of the most almighty climb downs in history. The acceptance that the injections are not safe, that they are not effective, they are in fact extremely dangerous and completely useless. Now, that's a long, long way for politicians, health officials, Alfred Buller, you know, Uncle Tom Cobley, Dr. Fauci et al. To travel. It's a long way for Justin Trudeau to go, but they're going to have to go there.
What do you think about this nihilistic argument I'm hearing that I've heard this in defense on social media? Say, well, you know, 30,000 people died from this. That's not a big deal because a billion people have had the shot. So they were saying it's okay if 30,000 die. That's just what's reported.
People People convince themselves of anything. You know, I mean, we really don't know the number that have died, because particularly the early days of the vaccine, it was, you know, very largely covered up. You know, the postmortems weren't conducted. Okay, somebody's just died. All right, they've died. That's it. You know, the data wasn't collected comprehensively, but the total number of people dying doesn't lie, and there are more people dying now in vaccinated countries than there were at the height of the so-called pandemic. You know, the people on the street know why everybody's dying. It's no secret, but we're all being gaslit by the lying corporate media, who continue to ignore the whole thing. Interestingly enough, talking about grassroots and all the rest of it, a new organization, new to me anyway, has just sprung up out of the freedom movement, which uses the UN's colorful circle, the sort of World Economic Forum O, with the segments in colors, Patrick. I'm sure you're familiar with it. It's the Agenda 2030 symbol, I think.
Yeah, I call it the Rainbow Taurus. The Rainbow Taurus.
Right. Well, interestingly enough, we've got a huge one up here in the main square in Valletta in Malta, because I think for the first time in their history, Malta is going to have a seat at the United Nations Security Council in 2023.
Seriously? Wow.
Yes, and so they've waited their turn. So there is, as a result, there is a huge silver golf ball planted in the main square in front of the former palace of the Grand Master of the Knights of St. John. And this huge silver golf ball, about 15 foot tall, is surrounded by multicolored cardboard cutout people dancing.
Oh my gosh.
I'll try and get a picture of it for you. But I digress. This organization, notourfuture.org, a new grassroots organization, has put a big black N in capital letters in front of the UN Agenda 2030-O. So it obviously reads very clearly, no. And the website is www.notourfuture.org. And they've produced already a couple of minutes introductory promo video with, amongst others, Right Said Fred, the pop stars and songwriters from the UK, and another interesting figure, really the polar opposite of Gary Lineker, former England footballer Matt Letizier, who has been very on the ball. Of course, these former footballers have much bigger audiences or much bigger immediate reach, shall we say, than people like I do. And Matt Letizier has been doing some great stuff about the danger of the vaccines. And he has signed up to this notourfuture.org. And there's a pledge to be signed, and a whole campaigning organization being set up to call a halt to this unwanted, you know, interlocking, really, agenda of the whole phony climate change, the mass migration, the injections, the digital ID, deindustrialization, decarbonization, you name it, Patrick. We know what they're doing. It's all pretty dastardly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's good. It's good to see more people weighing in on this, people from different quarters.
Yeah.
So that's really positive.
Absolutely. So, you know, there is hope. That's the thing. There is hope, but we've got to wrest the lying corporate media. You know, that's got to be our target, really.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just talking about the Associated Press just fired that journalist that put out that fake story that Russia fired a missile into Poland last week. They sacked the journalist again. It's just ridiculous. Why sack the journalist? There's editors and editors above him that greenlit that story and everybody copied it. Next thing you know, we're on the precipice of World War III. And what do? They sack the journalist and it's like no harm, no foul. Move on, carry on, no big deal. Remember last week?
Right.
It was all World War III last week. Now it's like, oh well.
So, yeah, exactly. Meanwhile, CBS have confirmed 769 days after the New York Post originally broke the story, CBS have confirmed that the Hunter Biden laptop is real.
I saw that. I thought it was a joke. 2 years later.
Yeah.
2 years.
Yeah. Absolutely, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they eventually get it right.
That's right. But so that's a narrative that's completely crashed. The other, there's so many at the moment. What's happened to David DePape? What's happened to him, Patrick?
I don't know. I think he's going to be on. They'll put him on a reality TV program. I think he'll be in the jungle with Matt Hancock.
Yeah. Well, damn. You know, but that whole story has completely vanished. And what happened to the reporter that said, and it turns out now, I believe it's accurately, that Paul Pelosi opened the door to the police?
They fired him.
They fired him as well.
They fired him. Not the producers that ran the package. They fired the reporter who actually got the police's statement. So he reported the facts and he got fired.
That's right. Then we've also got the COVID-19 death rate by vitamin D level, showing that vitamin D deficiency is very closely associated with higher rates of death from COVID. Something denied by the authorities at the height of the scam. Likewise, treatment with ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. So that's all got to be unraveled as well.
Mm-hmm. Matt Hancock, he brushed that off, didn't he? And said, "Oh, we're doing studies." He never did any studies. He said that vitamin D doesn't work.
That's right.
Remember that? He lied to Parliament. And got away with it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And finally, I don't know if you saw this, but Tucker Carlson featured it last night. The Spanish fashion house Balenciaga, using really very young children who look about 3 or 4 years old in their latest advertising campaign, holding what is bondage apparel.
Why does that not surprise me?
Yeah, that's the latest.
Well,
tasted in extreme. And part of this ongoing process of sexualizing children.
Well, I'm surprised they weren't in drag. You know what I mean? It's like nothing's out of bounds for these people, honestly. So it's just getting more depraved, isn't it? The whole fashion industry just has to go, I think. it's finished. The emperor has no clothes. The emperor has no clothes.
I think a lot of people feel that, you know, the sort of post-scandemic world just sort of feels very different to what the world felt like before that. People now look back on the 1980s, for example, with the 90s, with tremendous nostalgia, you know, the pre-internet days of tremendous freedom and all the rest of it. And of course, the Second World War generation, the Korean War generation, even now the Vietnam War generation, are all died out. And so we have a population in positions of power and influence in media, government, politics, in popular culture and all the rest of it, who are quite divorced from the history of our shared culture and identity, Patrick. Do you take my point?
Oh, I completely. Well said. I mean, that's perfect way to wrap up this segment, because that's where we're at as a civilization, and we need to figure this out. And thank you to Basil Valentine for raising important issues once again on TNT, Today's News Talk. Basil, safe in your travels.
Thank you, Patrick.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. That is Basil Valentine. Let's take a break here with TNT and Connect best-selling author F. William Engdahl on the other side, breaking down BlackRock and the energy crisis. How did this all start? We'll see that and more on the other side.